Hey, everybody. This is the Brothers Wrist number 55. What is it? September 30th, right on the cusp of October. I am Greg Soule here in Texas. Tonight, special treat. You've got tasty little Tom Smith here.
Sup, homies?
All the way from Ireland. At the very top of the screen, way up there, you've got Justin Wilson. Where are you at, Justin?
I'm in great old Indiana, getting ready for fall weather.
There you go. Then right next to him, somebody who's been here, I don't know, it's been ages, I guess, since you've been here. It's Alex Hart. There's no E in that Hart, right?
Correct.
All right. I'll get it right this time. Alex, where are you at?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. And he's just as much a hipster as you think he is. Then right here, we've got Mike Hammett from Chicagoland. Say hi, Mikey.
How's it going?
Excellent. Let's see. Let's kick it off. Mike filled out half the sheet this time, so he's got all of his important stuff at the top, and it's all sponsorship related. So let's tick off the list. We have buy-sell sponsorship is right up at the top. What is that? What does that entail? Give me a 30-second preview.
Actually, Justin's probably better at that than I am, so on the buy-sells.
We're just going to do some in-depth interviews with them about, how their product's doing and, do a little bit of I don't want to say a deep dive with them, but, do a little something special with them, give them a little more time, get to talk to, Rick and Patrick and a couple of the other folks, hopefully, and, give you guys an idea what they're up to.
Very cool. We have Justin Miller from Virginia who just popped in, my brother from another Rick and Morty mother. Say hi, Justin.
Hi.
Fantastic. All right, next on the list was Microcom sponsorship. What's that entail?
That Microcom is a distributor. They've got some training, the Ubiquity training going on. I believe it's Saturday, Sunday, or Sunday, Monday of the show. I don't have to know when it is exactly because I have it on my calendar that I made, which is what their sponsorship is for. And you get $100 off. And then I believe we get another $100 out of that. So basically you go to this Ubiquity training and you get to, pay for part of our hotel rooms.
Come on, Mike. You're not supposed to disclose how much you're getting paid. It's going to make the other sponsors jealous.
We'll see. That's just not part of the deal.
Okay. Next to you on there, you have Baltic sponsorship. Give me 30 seconds on that.
Basically the same thing as Microcom, except they have Microtik and Ubiquity training different days. They do go Saturday, Sunday, and I think Monday as well, depending on which training. And basically, you get a discount on there, and we get some money from that one, too. And basically, that kind of helps us
fund this adventure. Yeah, and we're not looking to get rich. We're just looking to break even if we can. So please help where you guys can.
Yeah, and I suppose... everyone keeps complaining about the audio quality, and I always assume it's mine because I have the worst audio setup for everybody here. So these sponsorships will buy me a new audio setup.
Well, I think part of it, too, is that you're using your laptop mic, I guess, and then you type on a bag of potato chips. So it kind of
I have a real dedicated Logitech HD webcam.
Fantastic.
Well, I'm going to be like the worst audio.
Well, that HD webcam picks up everything.
Yeah. Well, nobody's here to see what you, or rather to hear you, Tom. Everybody's here to see you. You know what the people want. Yeah. There it is. All right. So speaking of sponsors, the Wispapalooza sponsors that haven't signed up, we're trying to line you guys up for time slots on Tuesday and Wednesday to do kind of the 2 to 3 minute intro video with you guys, and then while we're there might as well talk just a little bit more. I want to go ahead and get a little bit of extra footage in the can that we can edit in to kind of our after movie. I think, Mike, are you the keeper of that schedule?
I've given you and Justin access to the calendar, but I've been the one driving the web.
All right, good deal.
I just want to mention, let's not forget about tower coverage too.
Okay.
Tower coverage is, they contributed to the GoFundMe I had up there, so they're going to be kind of the same deal as buy sells. We're going to get into a little deep dive with them. They got a new towercoverage.com. They got new features on there that we're going to talk about and that sort of thing.
Very cool.
Yeah, I remember we interviewed one of the authors of the radio mobile software, who's very heavily involved in tower coverage. Pretty awesome guy. Robert, he's French, I believe, French-Canadian or French, but really nice guy. So it was really cool to meet him in the first Whisper Blues I went to. So
always name-dropping, Tom. I'm not going to get you anywhere.
I was just saying, I was kind of...
All right, so just popping in, top right, Andrew Cox, all the way from Kangarooville. Say hi, Andrew.
G'day, fellas.
Good day.
Excellent. G'day. Man, this is more people than we've had on in forever, and there's very little content on the Google Docs, so let's see what ends up happening. I think it'll just end up being Tom singing his U2 songs for a half hour. What's that?
I said, look at the number of posts I've made on Facebook. I can add content as long as you want.
For sure. All right. Let's jump into some actual things with some stuff. Something Mike posted up, which I thought was interesting, is something about long path BGP advertisement filtering. So whenever you're getting advertisements in LRI on the big bad internet from your BGP peers, it'll have an AS path, right? Autonomous system number path. So however many autonomous systems you hop through. And apparently somebody was nice enough to send, what was that, an AS path of 22,000, I think?
2,200.
2,200, I'm sorry. 2,200 paths. And apparently there's a, I'm not sure if it's necessarily a bug or, well, maybe it is a bug in Quagga. At least I think they said in the last decade, all versions released, it tips all those guys over, so... every 30 seconds or so.
I would call that a bug.
Yeah, I would call that.
I call it a pretty crappy bug that was highlighted about 10 years ago when all the Cisco routers did it, when someone from...
Yeah, it's a Microtik router, right?
It was a Microtik router that the person put in their AS path in the AS number in their AS path prepend number, which basically meant, prepended 40,000 times.
Yeah.
Of course... The Cisco routers dutifully took that, then re-advertised it on, and then crashed.
But yeah,
not
yeah.
before re-advertised it on to crash the next.
I don't think it was 10 years ago. I think it was maybe 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago, something like that.
Yeah,
I know.
No, 2009, yeah, right.
I just remember because as soon as it happened, I went in my Cisco devices and I put the BGP max AS limit command in there, and I limited it to somewhere around 30. Just to keep my gear from tipping over.
Good call.
I don't blame Microtik for that one. It was user configuration.
It's actually
error.
Cisco's fault.
Yeah.
Microtik, the UI was at fault. And Microtik software did what the UI said, which is good. I like when Microtik's UI matches what it's doing. What's rare is wonderful. And But Cisco were definitely at fault there.
I think,
if you have that bug for the last 10 years, fix your fucking shit.
Well, I mean, it's a feature, right? It protects you from getting too long of an AS path by tipping over.
I think if it crashes your router, not so coolly. maybe say it does not compute, maybe just not add the AS or that prefix. But yeah.
Sure. I think Microtik subsequently changed the configuration interface on that, right? On the prepending? I think it's.
I know what they did. So, no, in fairness, they have. And they also have an AS path prefix limit.
Yeah, they made it so you couldn't.
Say again?
I was just saying they made it where you couldn't type in or, you know, couldn't do that many numbers. It turns red after a certain point.
Gotcha. And for, I guess for anybody listening that's unfamiliar with BGP, why would you want a path so long? If you're trying to manipulate routing, you prepinned, right? You add your own autonomous system number multiple times to make it look further away artificially, right? And so I'm assuming that's what had happened. I can't really verify, but in this link we're going to have in the show notes, it shows you how to fix this for Cisco, Juniper, and Quagga. He's got a filter list in there for Quagga. So if you're not already protecting yourself, you should start now.
Actually, that was some real interesting timing on whoever did that, because for like the prior 2 weeks, there's been a thread on Nanog discussing, should you limit your, you know, AS path length? And if so, what should you limit to? And it seems like there's equally spirited people for and against AS path limiting. And then somebody does this and blows up every Quagga.
Well, I do AS path limiting of 20. And I think from Talia, that's the only peer I get where I actually drop any of these. And I think there's only about 4 or 5 total routes that get dropped. Yeah. So pretty much everybody stays within there.
Your average is around, I think, between 3 and 6 AS paths, you know, in your path. But I think I put it around 40. I think 40 is not going to crash anything. And you're less likely. So to cover the edge cases that you're referring to, Greg, not to have any prefixes missing, 40 is still a relatively sensible number. But because, you know, sometimes you find yourself having to prepend the limit daylights and you're like, okay, I'm going to push this up to, you know, you're like at 5 and it's going, take the fucking hit. I don't want to use it. Still not.
Well, honestly, just because you prepend something doesn't necessarily mean it's going to, everybody else is going to take heed of that, right? So if you prepend to an upstream and they decide that there's a cheaper transit link they want you to take, I mean, they can ignore that. So it's sort of best effort.
Sledgehammer, boom,
Hey, man, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, so.
Yeah, then you send them an email or you try and send a community. Yeah, no, but like it is. But yeah, so I think around 40. I used to have a 20 like you because it was some BCP that, you know, best current practice, I think, from Cisco. And I just said, man, I pushed it to about 40 just to cover some more of the edge, reasonable edge cases without crashing Quagga routers whose authors seem to be aware of a bug for the last decade and haven't fixed it yet. Maybe they should do something like that.
Okay. Let's see. Let's move on to Ubiquiti. We've got several on here on Ubiquiti. So Mike put in the show notes that, or maybe he put it on Facebook and I threw it in the show notes. Neither here nor there. As per Ubiquiti's Investor Day, I guess, announcement, they said they have no plans for the CBRS range, but henceforth, I'm calling it CBeers, the CBeers range.
Nice.
One of the analysts that was there in the room asked him what his plans were for CBRS, and then Robert went on to say that, you know, they had done stuff in 900, they had done stuff in 365 before, and it was a niche, and they don't really make money in niches like that, so they're not going to be focusing on there. I'm not sure if he's aware that they're getting another 100 megahertz and possibly another 500 megahertz, making that a very large band that most, if not all, WISPs will in the U.S. will want to use. And I believe there are some international bands at 3.5 gigahertz, which should line up well with this gear. And he apparently doesn't care.
I don't know. Maybe they're just buckling down, trying to be a little more savvy, let somebody else blaze that trail, and then if it looks hospitable, then they'll come on in. Maybe one of those things. Because I remember asking him, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I asked him if they were going to do any fiber to the home stuff, and they said that they didn't have any plans for it. And lo and behold, we've got some GPON stuff out, so there you go, right? If conditions are right and it makes sense, I guess they might jump into it.
Yeah, well, like back a couple of years ago, I asked them if they were going to do any 60 gig or any licensed, you know, 6, 11, 18 gigahertz bands, you know, anything like that. And he said no. And then the next day, Mimosa announces the AirFiber or the B11. And so then at the next conference, Ubiquiti's announcing the AirFiber 11. It's like, huh.
There you go.
I'm really surprised we haven't seen any 60 from them now that Nightnet and Microtech are doing it.
That you know, I assume it'll show up everywhere now that it's, you know, in chipset form, you know, anybody can turn one out. So,
well, I mean, if it's low hanging fruit, I don't see why they wouldn't, unless they think they're not going to move enough units. Right. I mean, you got to remember that they're a publicly traded company, so they've got investors to answer to.
Right or wrong.
Yeah. And apparently some dickhead short sellers that don't understand the WISP market.
All right. I was wondering if we were going to ever get around to talking about this piece.
I'm sorry, but like, and look, I don't have much skin in the game on this one. Like, you know, I used to be a Microtik fanboy. I bet against Ubiquiti in terms of back in Microtik, we're on that ship and Ubiquiti stuff. But if you look at the innovation in the last 10 years, the user interface of their stuff, the investment in the performance of the AirFiber stuff, it's been impressive. And like, you know, you saw one of these cloud analyst clowns just saying, oh, you know, the growth market is going to be the cloud. And you're like, well, how are people going to access the cloud? You know, Ubiquiti have been addressing a digital divide.
So really, Tom's, and I'm sure most of you guys have heard by this point, but Tom's talking about how there was some market analysis. I can't remember. It was something like Citrus something, Lemon something. Anyway, some guy did a report, and it was a very unflattering report where he basically said he couldn't understand how this model is sustainable, and the fact that they don't have a traditional sales force is terrible, and they've got to be, you know, fudging the numbers somehow.
Yeah, fraud was used in his language at one point.
Yeah, like it's, and being honest, for me, like looking at it from the Irish market point of view, like they really have a serious market penetration. They've, you know, where, you know, people, lots of small players have used their equipment to address a digital divide. You've used Microtik. Ubiquiti is a hell of a lot bigger than Microtik, and it's a lot more global, and it's a lot easier to use. So it has had a lot more common appeal. You know, and they've also come up with some pretty good products. The edge switches are pretty good. Like, you know, the Unify platform is stable. The wireless access points work. They're compatible with a lot of devices. It just pisses me off when we got financial advisors, so-called financial advisors, getting it wrong so many times and then, like, trashing what I think is actually a very viable, pretty good company that actually does real work, does manufacturing, and addresses a problem globally.
Well, I thought it was something that was interesting, too, that really caught me is in some of their marketing, they had that they have customers that become, I guess, basically evangelists for their product. And the guy was calling shenanigans on it, and he was calling bullshit. And I think anybody who's been on the Ubiquiti forums can agree that there are some serious fanboys out there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, by the way, I'm not a Ubiquiti fanboy. I've just seen what they've done. I've seen them as a competitor in the market space and how well they've done and how envious I am and how I got it wrong. You know, where I was like, I could have made a lot more money on this if I backed
it. Did Tom say he was wrong?
I believe he did.
It's wonderful. It's the second time in my life. Say again?
You heard it here, folks.
All right, we can end the podcast now. Thanks, guys. But no, I think I can't imagine why there'd be so much doom and gloom unless you're an outsider that just doesn't understand the market and the industry and kind of how this stuff works, right? So there's I would say there's more people deploying Ubiquiti in the US than anything else. And once you choose a vendor, for the most part, you're putting up their AP on your tower and you're going to use their CPEs, which means you've got continual customers. You know what I mean? You've got perpetual MRC coming from these guys because they're always doing new turnups. And guess what? When you have a new generation of gear that comes out, they've got to retrofit those towers, right? They got to go back and pull it. And so you know, there's, I think, probably really solid income. Maybe there was some confusion on sort of the horizontal market, you know, some of the things they're jumping into. Yes, the MFI stuff wasn't, you know, a home run. And I don't think the VoIP did that amazing. And
front row.
I'm not sure where the front row fits in. But maybe there's some grand plan where it's going to make sense at some point. Maybe it's just going to be a standalone product. I mean, I don't know. Who knows, right? I'm not inside their head. I'm not inside their marketing.
This whole thing was about money. It was about short selling the stock. So Citroen has a very big history of doing this. I think they just go out, they pick a company. They don't care what the company is. They just say, hey, we have enough analysis here that says if we do this, we can drive the stock down. And that's all it's about. They don't care about the company because they just want to make money on the short sell. And so what happened, I think, is they kept trying to short sell it and the stock was going up. So they're like, crap, we have a lot of our holdings out here. If anybody's ever been on the receiving end of a margin call, it's not a very nice thing. So, you know, they're probably sweating bullets a little. And they said, hey, we got to do something to drive this stock down to get some of our money out. And, you know, I think he basically crafted a story.
Interesting. So yeah, you think like Citron's a hitman that somebody hired to have this exact effect?
Yeah, but I think what's disappointing about it is it's kind of these financial analysts get it wrong so many times that they actually are effectively attacking a company that actually does some good, which is disappointing, you know. I suppose it's business, but it's
shady business.
Shady business. It's unethical. But look, what I'd be saying is when I met a new supplier for, let's say, Ubiquity rollouts that we do with Unifies and stuff like that, I was asking him, do they sell much? And he says, well, it's like this. If we sell any networking gear here to someone and they don't walk out with a Unify, we're wondering what are they doing. That's what the guy said to me. This was not, and I was like, they sell a lot of this. Look, I don't sell Ubiquity stuff. We integrate it in, let's say, customer sites for hotspots and stuff like that. But we're not, distributing it. As I said, I've no skin in the game, and I made a bad call a few years ago, kind of choosing Ubiquity over Ubiquity in terms of, the partnership side of things. But I would have to say that I do think they're wrong on this front. The shady operators, and I do think I'd say, once the dust settles, a lot of people are going to lose money because of the bullshit report. And I hope it's Citroen that does. I hope they lose the money.
Look, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here for a second, because I've read over both of the reports and all of the questions, and while there are a lot of things that were fluff, as Greg's already mentioned, the guy not understanding the evangelical nature of the Ubiquity users, the people who will put it in at home and then go out and say, hey, neighbor, you should get one of these. They work really well. That is legitimately how it works. But there was a number of questions they posed that could not be answered just with the data that we have available. And they asked Robert to answer those questions at the Investor Day presentation, and I don't think he really addressed a number of those questions. So whether it's just that he was like, don't want to deal with these, they're completely false, I'm not even going to entertain the allegations. But there was a lot of points that Citra made about their cash balances and things not adding up, and that may be some mismanagement. It may be that they did do something wrong, and they're not wanting to address it. But the other parts, yes, they were false. I think that they should have probably put more effort into addressing the other allegations around the financials for the business. So,
what is it? In every great lie, there's some truth.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, maybe there was. Remember, this is the same company we're talking about who accidentally sent someone, was it something in the realm of 40 or 60 million previously? Just because they got tricked into putting someone else's details on the
that's a common, basically? I think I think, though, you're taking one thing out of context. It's, you know, 40 million or 60 million or whatever it was, that's a lot of money to you and me. That's like an order for a company. Like, you know, if you look at CEO, like, I think it's term CEO fraud, where people target and go, oh, look, you want to do an order with us, you have to wire, you know, if you want those Qualcomm chips, you need to wire 60 million to this account or whatever it is, or whoever it was, the supplier. Yeah. And they usually compromise someone's address in the company. They do find out where's the order going to come. It's very convincing, and it's a multi-billion dollar industry. So I think that one, with respect to Andrew, and I think you're generally right on a lot of things on that one, I think you'd be wrong. And look, I don't have skin in the game and all that, but I think it's actually an easy target. The bigger the company, the easier it is, the more likely they're going to have those huge orders to say, oh yeah, wire to this account rather than that account, we've changed accounts. You know, how many times have we got legitimate requests from suppliers, you know, to actually wire the money to a different account, you know?
I get that. It is easy for that to happen to a company, and that's no small amount. Like, based on their most recent report, there's the quarterly revenues of 228 million. So 60 million is a huge amount of that. Like, it's it's like saying we lost a portion of our profits for the year. And it's I think that the thing that they've not really addressed is, a lot of people have been saying there is no big boys at the table, and I understand why that is right now, where they've come from, and why the company has grown up like that. But they could address all of these concerns by putting someone in who is in an experienced position and say, let's put this person in as the CEO or COO or CFO. We'll have someone at the table that the market knows and respects, and they'll be able to help us answer all these questions and quash any discontent, basically. So you know, I don't know why they wouldn't do that.
You know, to that end, I've actually worked for a company before where we were a small company, grew up, and we were doing really well. We were selling aggressively. I mean, we were really banging out some quality stuff. And we decided we were going to bring in some outside investments, some new outside investment. And these investors needed a package, right? We had to deliver this package to them to court these guys. And part of this package was we had to look like a legitimate company, right? So we had to obtain those positions, right? Not necessarily C-level positions, but we had to obtain these specific high-level positions. And to be honest with you, it was a huge expense to the company, and our momentum slowed down because of it. We had to bring in these outsiders that didn't know our industry, didn't operate as efficiently as we were working before. And we've never quite recovered from that. Believe it or not, the company that I was working for never quite picked up the same momentum, the same steam we had before. So to that end, just from seeing that with my own eyes, I don't know that it's always a great idea to just bring in what the people that need the package think you should have. I think it can be counterproductive sometimes.
Doesn't Ubiquiti get their name out in all of this, regardless of if there's truth in it or not, though? I mean,
any press is good press.
There's so many people that I know that wouldn't have anything to do with Ubiquiti, didn't know about Ubiquiti prior to this. They're talking about it just because a little bit of this press gets out. And I don't know if they have a decent product, then maybe this damages them a little bit in the short term, but long term, they're going to benefit from this, right? If they do have their ducks in a row.
Well, our friends are like, we want front row cameras.
I was looking at what their stock values were, and less than a week later, it was back to what it was before that announcement. Less than 1 week, it was already above, you know.
It was, but you'll note that during the actual Investor Day on September 26th, where Robert got up and was supposed to be addressing some of these concerns and talking about it, he did talk about some of them, but his answers did not inspire people. So it actually took another dive on throughout the 26th. So the middle of the 26th, I'm actually looking at the graph here. It dropped back down to below $53, which is, it was up at $55.50 at the start of the day. So that was as a direct result of his statements in response to the Citron report.
So it's a 5% drop, roughly.
Yep. And that's like, obviously, like, we don't expect the company to go anywhere. We know that the hardware exists. We know that everything that's coming out to us as internet service providers is legitimate. But this company relies on investors. It relies on people being believing in that product to allow it to continue to operate and grow. And they need to make sure those people are happy too. But it looks like, based on his responses, a lot of them are not.
But isn't it true that he owns like 70% of the stock anyway, or at the minute? Is that?
It's somewhere around 70, yeah.
He's a majority owner for sure.
I am so jealous.
I think he didn't he sell off like 1 million shares not too long ago, Mike? Is that something you posted up?
He
traded him for Bitcoin.
He sold a bunch of shares maybe like a month ago, something like that. And the rumor is that his agreement with the Grizzlies, needs to buy out some of the other, shareholders by a certain day, or something else happens, and then he loses his majority share or something like that of Grizzlies. So then somebody, so he just sold some of his Ubiquity shares to buy the rest of that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking it was actually leading towards. There's been a lot of scuttlebutt about it, at least for you NBA fans. Something like the Rockets sold or something like that not too long ago, and it's drastically increased the value of all of the NBA franchises, and so he actually had to pony up more money than he was anticipating, something to that effect. So, there you go. While we're talking about Ubiquity, Mike, always watching the FCC, noticed that they have some new power beams and light beam omnis.
They look like they're basically the feed horn from a power beam or a light beam with a little skirt on them to reflect the signal back, horizontally instead of, into a dish that focuses it, with the intent of, having like a micro pop, type deployment. And I don't know. I mean, Mimosa did really good with their A5s at that micro pop type style with the, four omnis in one housing type thing. And, for sure that's a lot more expensive than what Ubiquity is going to be pushing out with these omnis here, but once you just get a rocket and stick a rubber duck on it, you'll have the same, actually, I should not even have that because with the,
I'm just imagining like a rocket, like a space rocket with just like a yellow rubber ducky on it.
Sweet. I'll bring you one in a week. You also have on this list.
Oh, I don't need your red rocket.
It's got a duck though. I've got on the list Air Fiber 5 HD. What's the story on that?
They sent out an email last week maybe. And that was by far our most popular post of the past 2 weeks. Huge reaction. 3,000 people clicked on that post. So basically,
you were half of the mic.
Easily. Time.
I hired a Bangladeshi firm to just click on them for me. That's going to be their first LTU product. Nothing to do with LTE. That's Air Fiber Generation 2. And you know, we've got a video of that announcement from last year. This supposed to be a gigabit point-to-point product initially, and shortly after that, multi-point.
Nice.
So is that the LTEU stuff?
There is no LTE.
LTU or what? They LTU. Had that big.
Yes, LTU. Yeah.
It's just, that's LTU.
Okay, yeah. That's what this is. Is the AirFiber 5 HD? Is that point to point multi-point stuff? Is that what it is?
That's you know, this will be the first iteration of that. You know, I imagine they're going to replace all all previous AirFibers with an LTU based platform. And you know, and introducing multi-point and 5 gig, and you know, probably other things. You know, it's got SFP ports and you know, higher QAM levels and other magic that I don't know.
So something else while we're talking about Ubiquiti is, this says UBNT just released firmware supporting GPS sync and mix mode AC plus M. And of course, Mike couldn't say, "Oh, that's nice." He had to complain immediately.
Well, I didn't complain. In the beta forum, they already said the plan. You know, first we'll do XW hardware, then we'll do XM hardware. Like, you know, it'll follow up in a few weeks afterwards. But in the public announcement, they just say, you know, M series. They don't make the distinction in the marketing that only a subset of the M class hardware will have it, you know, now. And if you have, you know, as that means that if you have any XM hardware on that access point, you can't take advantage of that. And there's probably not too many pure XW networks out there. So
wait a month. Does anyone else here think that Mike is as hard on Ubiquiti as I am hard on MikroTik?
I would say that I'm equal opportunity.
How many years did it take for them to actually deliver on the GPS sync?
Quite some time.
You know, that's the whole reason they stopped doing the world conferences, right? Everyone, they announced GPS sync, and everyone, they didn't actually have it.
Yeah, I remember that at one of the conferences. Yeah. remove sync. One of my favorite lines from the Cambium talk we did the other day was, they said with the Elevate, they said, "We actually brought GPS sync to the Ubiquiti product before anybody else did." I thought that was ballsy.
I like that.
That was slightly cold-blooded.
But true.
Right. I mean, yeah, absolutely. let's see. Another big announcement, I guess it was a big announcement, is that Sonar acquired Wispmon. I figured Miller, I wanted to pick Miller's brain on this, right? Because he's a big Visp guy. So these are outside. These are outliers. I know JJ is a big proponent of Sonar. He's recently done some migration. He's had some really good experience so far working with the ownership, the developers, actually suggesting features and having them integrated. He's got a pretty big footprint, so I think he's got a lot of pull. Not to say the smaller guys can't request features as well. But what do you think about this, Miller?
Consolidation and merger.
Yeah, M&A, man.
M&A Monday.
So how do you feel about it? So if you were, say you were a Visp customer, and then you heard that Sonar was acquiring Visp as well, would you be worried about that?
I don't think that would happen. But
if it did.
Yeah,
but
theoretically, did, how would you feel about that?
I would be a little concerned about it. I mean, I believe in Sonar, you have to run your own Radius server if you want to have Radius authentication. That might have changed. I don't know. But there might have been more work on my part to get up and running with it. But, you know, I haven't really looked at Sonar in quite a while. So
Well, I'm just trying to put myself.
The Sonar platform looks nice. It has a great interface. A lot of people like it. It's like hot buzz, you know, going on.
Yeah. Well, put yourself in a Wismon customer's shoes. How would you be feeling right now?
It's probably a good thing for them, I think.
Oh, really? You don't think? Do you think they're going to carry on the product? Or do you think they're going to depreciate it? Right? Because Sonar.
I think they're
going to
migrate everyone over, probably.
Well, and you know, I know Cameron, you know, personally, Mike does, you know, he put together a very good product. So I am sure there are pieces of Wismon that they want that would save them tons of development time. But the acquisition of Cameron is probably a bigger deal for them.
So Cameron's from Wismon?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, some of Cameron's history is, RF design, RF engineering. He worked for Sprint, way back in, I think, the 90s or someone like Sprint was doing some deployments, overseas. When he owned a WISP, he was designing and building his own sector antennas because they were better than, what he could get elsewhere. And so then the Wismon, platform had, some unique, RF, I was going to say RF elements, nothing to do with the antenna company, RF aspects to it that no other platform had for quite some time, if not still, unrivaled.
You might be asking what type of aspects?
Just like tower coverage calculations and things like that, or?
Yeah, on a basic level, it has what tower coverage has, but it's built into your billing platform. It's not a separate add-on.
Sure.
I'm not going to say which ones does that part better, tower coverage or Wismon, because they've argued back and forth quite a bit about that. But tower coverage, you can go, punch in your address, it pulls your towers from your management platform, figures out which towers are the best ones, kind of sends the results to you as, hey, customer over here is looking for service and we think they can get service from these towers. And it does a lot of the FCC paperwork as well, for your coverage areas and stuff, stuff tower coverage does, but, as an integral part of the program.
Gotcha.
And so I think that's probably going to become a real big aspect of, Sonar going forward is that RF knowledge and ability.
Yeah, and I think it just goes back to, it's not that they're buying software, they're also acquiring Cameron's talents.
And customer base.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, how long are they going to retain Cameron, right? He's probably got a contract for maybe a year, maybe a year and a half to transition, right? He may not stay.
Never.
Yeah. Let's see. Moving down the list, there's something highlighted bold in red. I think it's probably Miller did this here.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
Unified Video 3.8. What's the story?
Yeah, so I went through and updated a bunch of my Unified Video servers and did that during the day on Friday, which was a bad idea. And then on Saturday, I get a call. None of our cameras are online anywhere. So turns out in 3.8, Ubiquiti decided to change the video port to 7442 and also, I think, enforce encryption over it. So
this is between the server and the camera.
Yes, between your unified video controller and the cameras. So if you didn't have that port open, all the cameras would show offline. And I also had probably, cameras that I had to go in, update the firmware manually, and then reset them to factory default, and then re-add them.
I ran into that same problem when I was updating a little while back.
It's not fun.
To their support, and they're like, "Oh yeah, you just need to reset them to factory defaults and reconnect them to your controller." And that was, of course, after I did quite a bit of other troubleshooting on the server side, and it ended up being camera firmware update problems.
So apparently, they forgot to add a CA bundle for Curl, so Curl can't get the firmware off of the controller because it's certificate error, basically, and it just
bombs. Makes sense.
And so you have to go and manually update it or do Curl manually and skip the cert check to get it upgraded. And then, you know, the new port didn't have a port forwarded, so it's just kind of pain in the butt on Saturday morning for 3.5 hours. So, little PSA.
Exercise caution, maybe try it on one machine and see how it goes. Don't do all of your servers at once, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't catch and fix that in the beta.
Really
it's inside the upgrade notes when you go, but if you're doing apt-get update upgrade.
Right, yeah.
They didn't pop up and say, "Are you sure you want to do this? There's a change." They just, you know, boom. So.
I mean, I heard that before. That's, I'll have to watch that.
All right. All right, so here's another one that showed up in Bright Green. Have you guys ever seen anybody doing deep sea fishing, you know, where they're like catching a marlin, right? And so there's a chair and they're strapped in like in Jaws. You put on the big harness. I would say everybody sort of mentally do that because Tom's about to melt your face. You guys ready? You ready to fight this beast?
All right, Tom. Miller's not. He just left.
Like, yeah. I could do it, I would.
Oh, he's back. So
BSD so, yeah, Con 2017.
I went to Euro BSD Con in Paris, so it's my second BSD conference. Myself and Greg did a podcast, which he didn't properly record or something. The last time
you're gonna rub that in, huh?
Just to give that back. So yeah, Euro BSD Con. So it's a Europe conference for BSD users, developers, sysadmins, and wannabe fanboys like my good self. Because I'm neither a developer and I suppose I'm trying to be a sysadmin.
Don't undersell it. You're a full-blown fanboy.
Well, yes, but I would like to think it's because of critical analysis and how all the problems that I've had so far have been my own fault, which is just awesome because I can fix my own faults. I can't fix other problems that other people refuse to listen to me and won't fix their problems. You know who you are. I'm not saying who I'm referring to, but I think you know who I'm referring to.
I don't know. You still have a lot of faults.
But basically, yeah, your BSD Con was awesome. So, yeah, it was in Paris this year, and it was 4 days, 2 days of tutorials if you wanted, which I said I needed and wanted. So I went to those, and 2 days of kind of conference talks, and really, really kind of cool. Like, you could meet like core developers of FreeBSD, of OpenBSD. I even met my first Dragonfly BSD developer, which was kind of cool because I never met one of them before. But yeah, the FreeBSD guys, OpenBSD guys, were awesome as usual. And I got to meet like Theo Durast, I got to meet Henning Brower. So we got to meet a lot of the core developers of OpenBSD and of FreeBSD and have a few beers with them, buy them a few beers, say thank you for writing software that doesn't cost me anything and just keeps running. So I actually met the PowerDNS, one of the PowerDNS core developers, which is pretty cool. So that was kind of cool, nice little treat. So I was asking him about, because I was talking about e-raving on about how awesome PowerDNS was, and I said I haven't used it yet. And he was saying, "Oh, you should." and I was kind of relieved to hear that they do have some, that the files are similar to the bind, that maybe you only have to change one or two lines to
migrate. You can import it into the MySQL backend too. Your bind files.
Yeah, and you did mention that as well, that the MySQL, said you were using that. I actually referred to your knowledge, and I said, "Oh, yes, I heard." So I was able to carry a conversation with a PowerDNS guy, core developer, based on my chats or overhearing chats between you guys. So I didn't even do it myself, but I could just fake it. It was awesome. So we had a few, but it was,
I heard you're
it was
good, really good.
Peter Hessler had a BGP training lab on OpenBGPD, and that was really cool because
that's cool.
It was a full day this time around, so we got to play around with a lot of routing filters, and actually got to play around with OpenBSD's virtual machine. So they have this, it's called VMM in OpenBSD, but basically it's a really, really, really secure virtual machine setup. Like, effectively, each virtual machine runs as its own process that can neither access a disk or send packets on a network. It all has to do inter-process communication with, like, it's all least privileged, proof-separated, pledged. It's just pretty cool. Like, so basically, it's almost inconceivable how a VM could root the box that it's running on or access another virtual machine because it's just no access to the file system. It has to do all these kind of very limited calls, which is really cool. Like, but actually, yeah, I got to play around with that, and they actually had a web interface really what I'm saying is, yeah, OpenBSD have made a VM hypervisor, and you have a web interface, and you can console onto your VMs, and I'm getting excited about this, which is kind of a bit much because I think everyone else does that, but this is ultra secure. But it was kind of cool because, to be honest, they only started about 12 months ago, so they've gone from zero and they've gone rebuilding it from the ground up. But what's really cool about them is they're saying, well, we're not interested in this part of hardware virtualization, so we'll just bolt on QEMU at that point. So they're going to have their core networking and disk IO virtualization. And then for other weird hardware, they're just going to say, oh yeah, just plug in your QEMU crap. They'll try and proof set that off. But it was just really good to meet, like, kernel developers like MPI at OpenBSD. So I bought him just one beer, which was disappointing. I'd like to buy him more because he's making the parallelization in OpenBSD in the forwarding paths. He's actually doing that work, and he's doing it the right way, as in a risk-averse way. So he's trying not to break stuff, as we've all experienced from various vendors, from various different OSs, where they've, tried that.
We know what you mean, Tom.
Yes, we
know
Tom, what you we mean. Get it.
So I'm not just saying them. I'm saying all the others that didn't do it right.
Every vendor I've ever used, yeah.
Do you end up trading off performance with all those security lockdowns? Seems like if you're having to make a lot of extra calls for security purposes, that your VMs are going to be.
They try to do. There are certainly, yes. Alex, you're dead right. Like, if you talk to an OpenBSD guy and a FreeBSD guy, the way I look at it is neither one is better. They just have different priorities. So OpenBSD, the security and, dare I say, stability is a priority. What they say is stability is that if your program starts misbehaving, they'll cut it. So they don't try to keep a misbehaving program running. Theo did a really good landmark talk about all the different security mitigations they've done. So they've done two mitigations recently that's pretty cool. They've done CARL, which is kernel address space randomization, and they've also done a mitigation to deal with return-oriented programming, which is basically where you have loads of little gadgets dotted around memory, and you try and basically string them together to execute exploit code. So it's a way of getting around. It's kind of complex stuff, and a lot of it's over my head, I'll be honest, but I think it's more or less to get around, like ASLR, where you only have small little places to write, so you just dot them around and you try and string them all together and you get an exploit. So it's really cool, the stuff that they're doing, and they have about 17 or so different exploit mitigations that they've. Yeah, so anyway, sorry, forget that. So yeah, really cool stuff. But it's certainly, if you want to learn more about networking or programming or operating systems or really cutting-edge technologies such as ZFS file store. So when you have Andrew Trift espousing the joys of ZFS, like I was at a half-day tutorial with the author of ZFS Mastery, and it is really cool. Like, I learned more than half an hour of storage trainee, or not half an hour, half day of storage than I probably have in the last 17 years of my IT career, you know. So it was pretty cool just to see. So it's a pretty good place to go. There's very non-commercial, people are very open, people are very friendly. And I definitely would recommend the EuroBSD Cal. And I have to say, Baptiste, one of the French guys, you know, he likes rugby. So we had shared a beer with him. He did a really good presentation on FreeBSD versus OpenBSD with a really cool OpenBSD guy who's Antoine. But it was really good. Plus, I might post a link to the slides. But it's definitely worth. I think if you're interested in using BSD or you use a Juno, or maybe you should check it out. Or if you're running, let's say, BSD based systems for DNS, I would recommend it. It's a lot, a good deal more technical than the others, the conferences that I would have gone to. And dare I say, with less marketing bullshit. You know, like people will call it as they see it. And look, all commercial conferences have that. You know, that's not a slight on anyone. But like I have to say, yeah, I was really impressed. It was 4 days well spent. I spent a lot of money up here paying homage to some guys that have made my life easier, and I want them. If they're listening, please continue to make my life easier. And to be fair, I had a few discussions with them, and you know, 5 minutes drawing a diagram, and I say, can you give me that feature? Which, to be fair, MakerTik have already. And I said, can you implement this feature really well? And they said, yes. So he just said, five lines of code in this file, five lines of code in this, email me, it'll be done. And I was like, yes. It was kind of cool to have that moment, but just to discuss the problem, and they say, yeah, it'll be solved.
You know,
see their minds working. Yeah,
a fanboy.
Send me an
email. Such a fanboy. All right. Something we get
I've noticed here is that no one on this podcast is ever as happy as Tom is talking about BSD.
Because
true story.
It solves problems for me. And I want you to solve your problems for you. I want it to solve your problems. I also want you to start using it so that I'll have someone to ask questions of when stuff doesn't work for me. I don't want...
You got to get new friends, Tom. So it's, you're wasting your time.
I'd like to
get better friends, I see.
If I could start a movement, not a movement, if I could get you to join this movement and all just... works.
Well, you just figure it all out, write a guide for it, and then we'll talk.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
But it was pretty cool, I have to say. There's, and I got a book called System D, Savaged by System D, and it's the first erotic Unix model novel I've ever seen. And I don't know if any of you use System D, or love it or hate it, or you're one of the lovers or the haters of it. But the author, obviously, I was surprised when he said he was writing about System D, but it actually turned out to be an erotic novel. So in his note, when he was signing my book, he says, if ever this book, he says, I never thought I'd say this to someone, but I think this book is just for, is just matches you perfectly. So that's what he wrote about me in that book.
So what does the D in System D stand for?
I do not know. But all I know is that there's a lot of hating got us on Twitter.
Okay. Erotic fan fiction for... I worry about you, Tom.
I read it was very interesting.
All right, let's abandon this before it gets any deeper.
Do you want me to give you some TLDR version?
I see what you did there.
It's set... in a computer room on a Friday night.
No.
Everyone's gone home. There's a knock at the door. I believe it. The rest
we're
your imaginations.
You read us two lines every cast, and we'll eventually get caught up. It'll be great.
heavy breathing.
I think that's a different cast you're talking about.
Well, we're working on sponsorship, trying to make money. We got to do it somehow.
That'll probably exclude me. Sorry about that, guys. Sorry if I've jeopardized any sponsorship. Tom's opinions are not necessarily the opinions of the Brothers Wisp. Terms of business, bye.
All right. So Andrew said he's got a good addition. I don't know if it's about the Australian internet security thing that's going on or if he's just got a one-liner he wants to toss in here. But I would like to hear about both. Oh, nice boot pee. Is that what you put on there? Is that it?
Nice boot pee. Let's bisque.
Guys,
oldest thing ever.
I hate you guys. Andrew, I remember you saying something like you wanted to get a little bit more information on the Australian internet security thing that you actually know more about. I don't know if you were there or not, but are you ready to talk about that thing with the stuff?
I'm still in the middle of that. I think that's something that probably deserves a bit longer. But I did see an interesting post during the week on the /networking board on Reddit. And it was someone asking about how people handle network blaming. And I had a very relevant support issue I was dealing with this week as well. So I thought I'd pose the question to the group as to how you all do that. And when I say network blaming, I'm talking about customer calls you and says, we can't get our VPN up, or our voice services aren't working. And you're like, that's strange. We don't provide you any voice services. Is your internet fine? And they go, yeah, our speed test seems to be fine. It's just this one service that we rely on.
Who's scraping?
Dude, who's scratching the records?
Sorry, that's me. I forget you guys can hear that.
Come on, Greg.
Don't scratch your bum during the podcast, man.
Well, the mic I used for recording this audio.
Well, I'm relieved it was just that. I didn't see both of his hands during that exchange.
So. I don't need my hands.
It seems to be getting a little bit faster. And
that's the problem.
Erotic talk, so. His breathing was accelerating as well.
And so it's I'm just acting out the erotic novel. That's what I'm doing.
That's writing. You could hear a hard drive writing just there.
All right. So back to the network blaming. Sorry about that. Network blaming.
Yeah. So you have people who may or may not
causing my network problems.
There we go. We've all seen instances of this. We've all had this happen to us where I can demonstrate that your 1 gig service is using 5% bandwidth, and someone goes, well, I can't download at that speed. I'm sorry. Do you want me to get behind and push your packets? Like, how do you respond to these sort of things?
I think I'll jump in because I love the sound of my own voice. I think it really depends on what portion of the business you're dealing with, right? So I think Tom does a little bit of this and maybe some of the other guys too, but I work in the data center environment, right? So it's different than your home users, right? Those guys, you would like to... All right, let me put it this. You would love to believe that in a perfect world, if you're administering a data center environment, the people that are going to be coming at you are going to be from a point of greater knowledge and experience. Sadly, it's not the case. The people with more experience, from what I've seen over the years, people that work for MSPs have less knowledge than the people that work for private organizations.
Yeah.
I think it's probably, and I'm talking about like healthcare or petroleum, because those guys, they can pay a pretty decent amount for really good engineers, right? So those guys seem to be on the ball a little bit more than your average MSP. Case in point, we had an MSP move into our Houston data center at one point, and this isn't shaming. I don't mean to be shaming anybody, but they literally used a Linksys WRT54G in a data center.
Oh, man.
I mean, I'm not even kidding you. Or MSPs that bring in unmanaged Netgear routers and they're experiencing packet loss and they can't figure out why. And, you know, it runs the gambit of it's like a comedy of errors, you know, a series of follies, right? And so something I usually try and instill in my people is start at the basics. I get that this is a guy who has got network administrator in his title, but that doesn't necessarily mean he knows what he's talking about, right? And so it's trying to like find this balance where you humble yourself a bit and say, oh, I know this isn't the case, but you know, we always like to start at the start. And have you checked to make sure it's actually plugged in? You know what I mean? Just like asking just as innocently as you can. And it seems like 50% of the time it's a layer one or early layer two problem for these guys, right, that they're having in their infrastructure. But I take a different approach, I think, than most of the than any of my upstreams I've ever used before. And if somebody calls me in the data center environment and says they're having a problem, I drop everything and we're on it. And it's absolutely our problem. Like it is our fault until I can disprove otherwise, right? And so I instill in people, it's like, if you figure out that you found the problem, you let me know, because I'm going to continue to pursue this until you tell me to stop. Because we do offer insane SLAs, 100% SLA on that stuff, and go through a lot of hoops to prevent that. So one of the things we do is site 24/7 external monitoring, right? Geographically dispersed. I think some of you other guys do something similar, or have at some point at least, where you're hitting as many of your devices as you can, and then you're doing internal monitoring. And for me, I've got a couple of different monitoring systems, one at Houston, one in Bryan, and then that geographically dispersed. And if somebody has problems, I add them to all of those monitoring systems. I try and replicate it as best I can. And then usually I can disprove pretty quickly, right? Long-term trending, graphing information, right? SNMP, it's been around since the 80s, and it's still my number one proof point, you know? Somebody calls you and they've got a 40 meg interface and they're running at 40 megs, it's pretty safe to say that's what their problem is. I actually ran into that on Friday with somebody, you know, but it perplexes me. How are you not monitoring your own infrastructure? You're going to call me. I mean, they were super polite and it was a good interaction, right? It was a positive one. It perplexes me how people don't watch their infrastructure like that. You know, businesses, home users, that's a whole different can of worms. You know, I'm curious to see what you guys had to say about those. I've talked enough myself here. Let's hear what you guys have to say.
I think having knowledge, having tools, having data helps you make your own decisions on how to deal with the problem, depending on what the issue is. If a home user calls and says, hey, I'm not getting the throughput that I'm subscribed to, you know, it's easy for you to say, well, how are you connecting? Maybe there is a problem. Let's run through some things. Let me get an idea of what your environment is, what you're running up against. And usually if you say, oh, yeah, you know, what are you running? They say, oh, I'm connecting with Wi-Fi on my iPhone and the speed test isn't working. Oh, what version of iPhone? Oh, you know, I've got the iPhone 4 and the speed test is only showing 3 meg. Okay, well, you know, let's start there. Or like you said, maybe somebody says, hey, I have packet loss. Well, if you're pinging from different areas and you're graphing your packet loss, then it's easy to go back and say, well, my graphs show that there isn't a problem. Maybe we can have you use some tools here and see if the problem's on your end or not. So I think, yeah, how you approach the situation with the customer is important, and what tools and data you have available makes a huge difference.
And I think to your point too, something I know for 100% fact is different engineers take different approaches when they're working with customers. I've got a guy, after hours guy, who he's like a hammer. You know, everything's a nail to him. So he's very abrupt. He's pretty harsh with people, right? And so if you get him on the phone with somebody who's even mildly upset, it's just going to be fireworks. Wherein I've got several other guys. Most of my guys, as a matter of fact, when they answer the call, they're very ingratiating. They're like, oh, you know, they understand the problems and they try and look at it from that person's perspective. And, you know, and just having somebody know that you are listening to them and you're paying attention to what they say is like half the battle, I think.
Yeah. Even if it is a layer one problem, addressing it like, hey, you know, I've been there. I've, you know, have forgot to check if the cable's plugged in. You know, let's just make sure that that's there before we move forward, you know. Not just, oh, you're stupid and it's all your problem and you're not doing anything right. And
well, I mean, when we put in... when you put in tickets to your upstreams, do you actually verify power on your equipment, or do you just tick the box that says, yes, I've verified power on all my gear? Right. Yeah. I know my routers are
up. I check
right?
it all. I don't want it to come back and go, oh man. I know I said it wasn't me, but it was. And yeah. I don't want that to happen. I usually check it three times before I talk to anybody.
Or quite often, one that we get here is on the old ADSL services that the standard troubleshooting points are: one, have you plugged a phone and checked for line noise? Two, have you replaced the ADSL modem/router that's installed there? And normally it's like, that's a site that's about 2,000 kilometers away from me with the manager who doesn't know an iPad from an iPhone. So, yes, I've definitely done both of those things.
Absolutely.
Can you please check from your end first, and then I will send a new device out if necessary.
Yeah. No, like we have a similar issue, but for our business customers, what we try to do is say, like what you were saying, Greg, check your own bases first, particularly with new products. Like any issue is we just take it as it being our issue first. And then when we kind of, like we had an issue recently where we turned up a new service, like a new platform, and, you know, he was one of our first pilot customers, and he said, we're having lots of problems with this client site, maybe. And I said, well, we need to do an upgrade. We're kind of reaching capacity. Like it was just a proof of concept kind of deployment. And then we said, right, we'll get the proper hardware in afterwards, our bigger hardware in to scale. And that was fine. I was saying, look, and then eventually he was on the phone to me one day. He goes, look, it's really bad. The customer's really upset. And I said, okay, I'm on. I said, our units and our monitoring is saying everything's hunky-dory, and you're saying you're having terrible. He says, well, I'm picking the end IP that's terrible. Like, I was, you know, doing these management tunnels, which use the same traffic paths and everything like that. No issues. And it turned out that there was a loop on the other side. Like I said, they had a firewall, and then they had deep packet inspection, and then there was a loop on the LAN side, and it was actually caused the firewall to CPU to go nuts and actually just create packet loss. So I was kind of going, look, I said, I want to capture, if my equipment caused this problem, I need to capture the state. If I reboot my equipment and it all starts to work again, I've lost whatever state it was in that's caused the problem. So I asked him, I said, look, would you mind just plugging in your laptop? Just have a look. Plugs in his laptop, no packet loss, everything fine. He goes, so the problem's on our side, he's in. And I said, I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's something. I said, maybe it's a firewall. But I said, I just wanted to clear our kit first. And if it was, you know, so it was just one of those examples, but it was weird, you know, it was a loop LAN site. You wouldn't think it would cause internet packet loss from their perspective. Like, is it, you know, they had another site monitoring that IP, and he said, we're seeing 20% packet loss. And I said, I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it on any of our management, out of band management interfaces, which are using the same path. And it ended up just being a loop LAN site, but it's easier to come back and say it was my fault.
Well,
if you kind of investigate, but if you say, no, it's you, it's fuck you, it's your problem, I'm not doing anything for you, I think it's very hard to come back from that and go, well, actually, no. You know?
Oh, yeah.
If you take the approach right from the get-go of, hey, you know, not taking the defense, but getting on their side and saying, hey, let's build a case, let's figure out the problem and solve it for you.
Yeah.
If you don't, you know, it's not about whose fault it is. Let's figure out where the problem exists and get it solved.
Because exactly.
That's ultimately what they're looking for, and you want a happy customer, I hope so.
Yeah. Something that's happened to me before is, you know, we'll be troubleshooting a customer issue, and they'll not feel that they're getting satisfaction quick enough, right? So they'll start looping in their management, right? So it ends up with, like, the CIO or something like that of the company looped in on this email chain, and then at some point you figure out that they screwed up and it's their fault. And so you have to reply all and gracefully or very tactfully word the response saying, no, this is the problem and it was on your side and good luck, I'm sorry. So I hate it when people are too quick to do that, because 9 times out of 10, it's going to come back and it's going to burn you down, you know? And I don't know if, you know, you'll just look stupid in front of your boss's boss, and that's okay to you, but that kind of thing's not okay with me. So no. I try and be very tactful with that stuff.
I've got a consulting client that I've got a Ubiquiti point-to-point link going between two of their buildings. Like, you know, the bulk of this entity's facilities are connected with dark fiber, you know, 10 gig waves. But they had a fiber break going to one building. They had one PC and one phone, and they said, let's just put up a wireless link. So I put up a pair of, like, nano stations, like, 6 years ago to connect these two facilities. And Thanksgiving last year, the guy, like, day before Thanksgiving, you know, their network guy emailed me and said, you know, your wireless bridges are broken. You know, go fix them. So I'm out there, I'm looking at it. I'm like, yeah, you know, sure enough, pings aren't going through. I'll take a look at it. And so I'm working, you know, working it. And I end up getting Ubiquiti devs, you know, running into the machine, looking through stuff. You know, I've asked that our guy, you know, did anything change? You know, no, nothing changed. You know, things are bad. I'm like, well, I've replaced both of them. The configuration worked before, but I don't know what's going on. The devs end up finding out that the buffers on the wireless devices were filling up with traffic not destined for that link, and it was causing packet loss. And I was like, well, that seems like an odd thing to be happening. And so I put a little microtik box in between their switch and my nano station, and you know, just dumped out, I think, 25 megs worth of traffic. But it filled it immediately. I'm like, what's, there's one PC and one phone. How can it fill up? You know, the PC's not even doing anything. Wireshark it up. And I see communication between exchange servers. I see, like, you know, SAN replication. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? So I told him, like, look, I don't know why, you know, yes, my wireless device has a problem dropping packets because it's getting too much, you know, it's not gracefully handling this traffic flow. But there shouldn't be all this traffic coming into this box in the first place.
Yeah.
Why is this coming in? I don't know. It's not, you know, we didn't do anything. It's not our fault. And one of the network guys there was like, well, didn't you reconfigure, like, all this stuff that, like, last Tuesday, you know, the day before they told me that everything was broken? They're like, yeah, we changed some things. It's like, well, maybe there's a problem on the switch. Plugs in the switch. No, there's no problem. You just hear him pounding away. No problem. No problems. Oh, wait a minute. That port is a trunk port. And looks like all of the, you know, multicast traffic between these servers is, you know, going into that port. Let's go ahead and, you know, it was like 2 years prior, they had done, like, a massive network change because everything was trunk ports. Like, access facing was all trunks, and then apparently they forgot this one switch, and so then they're like, oh yeah, no, that's the only port that has that. No, actually, I think every port on that switch has that. Okay, so you didn't tell me you changed something the day before. You insisted it was my stuff, so I spent an inordinate amount of time running in circles trying to determine what I could possibly be doing that was wrong. And so then he had to explain the, you know, well into four figure bill he got for, like, 4 days of my, you know, emergency on-site, you know, network troubleshooting, because he forgot to make this trunk port an access port.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, and to be honest with you, that's happened to me more than once. So I've kind of rolled that into my list of questions after a certain point when everything looks clean. It's, hey, have you guys made any recent changes, recent as in the last week, that may be affecting this, or even that you think may not be affecting this. That's kind of like
I encourage him to do that again, because I did enjoy getting that check.
To be honest with you, I prefer to not suffer the heartache, you know, and a lot of what we do, I think, is word of mouth, right? Like, we're smaller guys. We're not the big boys out there, you know, swinging with millions of dollars of budget, right? So we build reputation up, and that's what we live by a lot of times. And I try not to make anybody look bad in front of their boss, right? Because they're going to be less likely to recommend me to somebody else, things like that, right? So I try and be as diplomatic as I can to a lot of these people, right, Mike? Everybody's baby's not ugly. It's just unique kind of thing.
Well, I think a lot of it's about expectations too. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a client not too long ago. I talked to this guy once in the past 2 years, maybe. He calls up at midnight, my time. He's in California, calls up. I got a slow disk problem. Okay, you know, I can try to look at it, but, you know, I don't really know your network. So I'm going to try to fix it. So I spent 2 hours with him on the phone. You know, a lot of that was just me learning his network. Hey, I have no clue how your network's laid out. He's driving down the road and he can't, you know, share any Visio diagrams or anything like that with me.
Right, right.
And, you know, I'm like, well, I can try to fix what I can, but I can't really see your entire network. So I make some changes. And I'm like, hey, you know, I'm just trying to manage your expectations here. I don't know if this is going to fix it or not. And he calls, you know, he calls me back about 2 days later. And, you know, he's all sorts of ticked off because I'd send him an after hours bill at this point for a sizable amount. And he's like, well, it ended up being the switch buffers. Why don't you tell me to replace the switch to begin with? And, you know, I'm like, hey, I tried to set your expectations here. I'm not going to come into your network and first thing replace all your gear, you know, especially when I don't know what's going on. So I think giving people expectations from the start, hey, like Greg says, here's your SLA. We have this tight SLA. You know, we're doing everything we can to meet this SLA. Here's our response time. Here's what we're going to do when you call us. Here's what we're going to expect when you call us.
Yeah. And you know what, when you say SLA, something that pops in my head is something I tell prospective customers when they're coming in for a tour, you know, and I'm helping out the salespeople, or if I'm giving the tour, I say, you know, we do 100% SLA. And I say, you know, that SLA, I'm the guy giving you that SLA, right? I'm the guy that makes it happen. It's not some weird amorphous company that you never actually see anybody from and you don't know anybody.
It's just a weird guy.
Yeah. It's a bald dude. We're all bizarre. But no, I think it's different, right? It's almost like a superpower all of the guys here and all of the guys listening have. It's like, I'm the person. I am the human being face to face that is going to guarantee you that this is going to be up, right? If you have a problem, I am the guy that's going to fix it. It's not going to be some bullshit guy in an entirely different country that has no idea of the network, the infrastructure, anything like that, right? It's like, we are the keepers of your network. I'm going to take care of you. And I think I used to not really give a crap about that, but I sure as hell give a crap about it now. Especially when you know, if you are the only guy and you got nobody to call and shit hits the fan, you know, you've only got yourself, right? So having quick access to vendors, trusted resign, I'm talking about upstreams, right? So the quality of your upstreams, this is tangenting a lot, but my favorite upstream provider is Taliyah, hands down. I call those guys, I've got an actual engineer on the phone, and if I say, hey, I'm seeing a problem here, they'll say, yeah, we dropped a redundant link, so we're you know, we're over utilizing the remaining 10 gig we have, and you're going to see packet loss. Like, they will tell you exactly what's going on. You know, they don't bullshit. I would say try and get a hold of Level 3 or AT&T and get that kind of granularity within 30 seconds. It's not going to happen.
Believe it or not, I get that with Cogents.
All right. See, there's some providers that you get a little bit more.
I know,
level.
But they're as cheap as chips, but I have actually got no BS responses and out of hours.
I'll agree there. You know, if every time I've had to call Cogent, I get someone who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Is that maybe because they have a lot of problems? Is it so they're just used to that?
No. To be fair, no, I've found them good. But have you ever had a blamestorming session that goes wider than you expect? So we had this.
I just blame the Irish.
And I was for 2 weeks. I was emailing back and forth, and I'd email a graph saying, "I'm really worried that there's an issue. There's a history of issue with the optics. Can you please look into this?" And they were like, "No, we don't see any problems." That was the response. Now for 2 weeks, I was sending them smoke paint graphs, everything like this, and I was getting the same response. Yeah, we had a look. No issues. And there's no supporting data, and I'm like going, "Fuck you!" So I email my account manager, going, "Seriously, I'm not happy with the way the support team is dealing with this. I've talked to level 3, I've talked to my escalation points, and like I have not seen one effing graph from these guys to say, Tom, it's just control plane policing. Don't worry about it." And I'm like, there's nothing here. You're not giving me anything that gives me any level of confidence. Given the history that we had a few issues with the league on commissioning, I suspect there's a problem here." And I said, "It's just not good enough and I'm not happy at all. And just make sure to put my contract on not altering you," basically. So that's what I said to my account manager, right? You know, that's my stick. That's like, fucking go down there to the other lads and tell them to do their job. Turns out he had left the company. And so it went up the chain to some vice president of, you know, European operations or something. So suddenly there was like about 30 people at an email chain. And it was like it was C-level anyway. And I was going, "Oh, Jesus." Like, it wasn't. I was bitching at my account manager. That was the kind of escalation point. I wasn't like going, "Hey, Mr. fucking coach, and sort it out." I wasn't coach, by the way. It was someone else. But anyway, I felt so bad because then, of course, I had to work with the technical team again. And they were like, "You fucking asshole. You emailed like the second guy in Europe." And I'm like, so I rang the team leader and said, "Look, I emailed my account manager. My account manager has left. It forwarded up like fairly steep vertically. Sorry about that." So, I said, I wanted to throw the dollars out of the pram. Don't get me wrong. I accept I was throwing the dollars out of the pram. I just didn't want him to go that far. Just a little bit. You know.
And also, you want to make sure that you didn't F up on that. That it actually wasn't your problem. Was it your problem or is it their problem?
So there was no problem on either side, but I had the data saying that there was a potential problem. And as they said, "What do you want?" And I said, "Give me an effing IP on your network that you don't control play police, that I can say there's no jitter," because I said, "I have literally no evidence from this." And I said, "Don't tell me to find a network that's directly connected to your network, to my network." I said, "Give me an IP on your network that I can hit." And they went, "Oh, okay." And I said, "Or give me graphs on the link that you say, look, I'm doing this kind of weird stuff on the, you know, the kind of OAM stuff that'll tell me all this stuff." I said, "You're giving me nothing. I'm giving you graphs saying I see a problem. You're giving me no graphs to say there is no problem." And then, you know, a guy starts lecturing, you know, pigs are a bad way of measuring this stuff. And I said, "Okay." And so he CC'd everyone on this lecture me. So I said, "Okay, I'm all ears. Have you another suggestion of a protocol that I could use to test this? Like, and particularly if you have access to any superior test methods there, could you supply me the graphs of it?" I wrote that in email, so it wasn't quite as sassy, but probably his email was to the point and my reply was equally to the point, where it was like, "Okay, asshole, you tell me which one I should use." So then I didn't say, "Okay, asshole," but that was in my head.
Right,
so
right.
If he's listening now, I was writing, "Thank you for that informative email. Can you make a suggestion on what testing methods I should use for your link. Meanwhile, can you tell me what testing methods you use on my link? Boom! Mic drop! Sorry. It's 5 in the morning. I could have woken up some people here. Sorry.
My problem seems to be a lot of these providers, they are really lacking with documentation, especially on what they have on the physical layer, data center, whatever. I've driven 2 hours to take a picture of their own equipment and say, here is where it plugs in after I've had major arguments with people.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've had upstream ISPs tell me they don't have gear in my building. And it's how are you telling me this right now? You've provisioned 10 customers off this same piece of gear in my facilities. How can you say this isn't here? It's just tricky. Sometimes, I guess, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
Yeah, exactly. And some of these companies are so big that, the people that you're talking to might not necessarily be wrong, but they get into a defensive posture that, I know, according to this screen, I don't have equipment there. Here's a picture that says otherwise. Let's move on, drop the attitude.
In the end, everyone got sorted out, and I am a happy customer.
Good deal. Oh, man. So, guys, we are at the hour and a half mark. Do you guys have anything additional really pressing that you want to get on this? Because we are running long.
Next time people hear from us, we'll be in Vegas.
Oh, that's right. And by we, you mean Greg, Mike, Miller, Wilson, Andrew's finger banging everybody. I think that's all of us, right? Nobody else is going?
I don't think so.
I'm sitting this one out. It pains me to say it, but it was just running too close to BSD Con.
We know where your heart lies.
Fine, so go come hang out with us.
The one I can actually make friends. It. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. True fanboy. He's starting to shun us. Shun the non-believers.
Run BSD.
Ugh. Excellent. Well, I've got nothing else, so let's stick a fork in this thing. Miller, if people want to get a hold of you out on the interwebs, how do they do that?
Facebook or my blog.
What is your blog?
Scienstatic.net. Facebook probably is better.
Yeah. You shun your blog almost as much as I do. Mine.
I haven't posted anything on there lately.
All right. I guess we'll go in a circle. Wilson, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how do they do that?
J2SW.com is where I'm pointing everybody to these days.
Booyah. All right. Mr. Smith, how would people get a hold of you?
555. Skype, WhatsApp, Facebook, Twitter.
He hangs out in the erotica fanfic BSD forums. You can find him there usually.
Not just there yet, but just give me time.
What's your handles? At Irish Damon?
No, it's Ogma Connect One, I think, because someone else took Ogma Connect, or maybe I'm not verified yet. With my 126 followers, boom!
I'm so proud of you. I'm
going to be so verified now. Shortly, just two minutes now.
Bots don't count.
What?
Bots don't count.
No, I think they're real people. At least okay. There is one that they go, hey, I've got nice photos. If you show me photos of you, I'll show you photos of mine. But I ignore those because of internet safety does count and it is important.
Gotcha. Always wear protection.
Enough people have seen my internet. Wiener. Actually, come here. What were you holding? Miller, you were holding something up that you wanted to discuss.
Greg doesn't want to talk about it.
The SNES Classic?
The SNES Classic.
You guys have been talking about it all, the last 2 or 3 days.
Do you still have to blow the cartridges to make them work? Or?
There's no,
that was the NES. It doesn't
open. Are we talking about BSD again? Or?
Oh, God.
Well, it does run Linux, so.
There you go. I've heard people have already loaded a ton of other ROMs and stuff on there.
I don't get them because you can buy a Raspberry Pi and load everything you ever wanted on it. You know, it's funny. Right here. Half the prize.
That reminds me of a Reddit post somebody was reading to me. It was the new SNES Classic came out, and there's your coworker who incessantly insists on reminding you that there's a Raspberry Pi you can load that will run all of that together. And his smugness level will increase greatly. That's pretty hilarious. All right. Let's keep it on track. Keep it on track. Andrew Cox, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Admin at microtech-radios.com. But I've been super busy, so don't expect a timely response.
Any response is worth it.
Are you coming back to the States anytime soon?
I will have an answer for you towards the end of October.
Sore subject. It's too soon. We can't talk about that yet. Mike Hammett, if people want to get a hold of you, other than facebook.com/thebrotherswisp, because all that good stuff is Mike. Don't let anybody else fool you. How else would you like people to get a hold of you?
Go to Vegas in a week and a half and just see me in person.
He's going to be a showgirl. He's auditioning anyway. I believe in him. He's going to make it. He's got the legs for it.
I'll be dancing one way or another.
Yeah. Been working on those high kicks. Alex Hart, Mr. Alex Hart. If people are going to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Facebook works well.
You gotta sell that brand, man. Come on. You gotta push it a little harder.
I'm going to have to start that blog that you all have that you don't use, and then I can push people there, but I don't have that to push people to right now.
You're going to hurt feelings. Let's see. So, yeah, you can find me on my defunct blog at gregsoul.com. Email me through there, and it's most likely I'll ignore you. But whenever I squeeze in time, I do this thing where I pound through a whole bunch of them really fast. And last time I did that, some of them were like 15 to 20 days old. And so I'm sorry about that. I apologize. But you can also find us at thebrotherswisp.com. I can't imagine people would be listening to this or watching this without knowing that existed. But probably the best source for information would be facebook.com/thebrotherswisp, because Mike's always putting up those juicy tidbits up there. Also, if you're old school, you can hit us at contactus@thebrotherswisp.com. The last email I got was from Mike, actually testing that did work and that I would respond, and both of those things came true. Yes. So I guess thank you guys. I hope to see you in Vegas. This is going to be my first Wispapalooza. I'm going to be a newbie.
I met you at Wispapalooza, didn't I, in 2011?
I was there for the mum. They overlapped one day. But I didn't actually do any of the Wispapalooza stuff.
So it's been about 6 years.
It's been a minute. That's
six
actually
years,
where I met Andrew.
Get back.
That's where I met Cox for the first time.
Lads, donate to the super pack for the Wispas pack, is it?
Wispack.
Yeah.
Donate to that when you're there.
Oh, yeah. One more thing that Tom always reminds me to do is go to lynda.com and look up Greg Soul and watch all my videos on there.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, this morning I finished recording another one.
Do you like listening to those smooth, dulcet tones? Get more at lynda.com.
I use my movie phone voice when I'm doing those recordings, so yeah. I guess that's it for us, guys. Thank you very much. I know this was a long one. If you made it all the way in, leave us a comment. I'd be curious to see that somebody actually survived it. Thanks and bye.